this season, I'm going to change it up a little bit. So season one, we talked all about title split as a property strategy. In this season, I'm going to broaden it up so that I can teach you all the stuff that I've learned over the last 25 years. And I'm going to specifically today talk about six winning strategies that I employed over the last 25 years. The idea being that I will share with you the pros and cons of each of those strategies, as well as what I think in 2025 onwards, the best winning strategy is, given the situation that we find ourselves with Section 24, leasehold reform, renters reform, as well as interest rates doubled since Liz Truss, and utility bills have trebled over the last 4 years or so. So in this season, we're going to talk specifically around those six strategies, and then you will be able to ask me any questions you've got after that. So let's get going with the first one, HMO. So what does it stand for? HMO means house of multiple occupation. The best way to look at HMO is like, think of university digs where back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, we all used to rent a big house at university. And in those houses, there were 5 or 6 or 7 rooms, and each of us had a room to rent. That's the model that the HMO works on. So typically, we will buy a 3-bedroom house with 2 reception. And that normally has been the winning strategy in the past. And I've been doing HMOs now for about 15 years. And we were buying 3-bedroom houses, 2 separate reception rooms. Why did we do that? Because straight away, we could then convert the living room and the dining room, which was already 2 separate rooms, as an extra rental bedrooms. So then the 3-bedroom house became a 5-bedroom HMO. So how do we make money out of this? Well, instead of actually renting a typical house at that time, let's say £1,000 a month, we were renting each room around £400 a month. So 400 times 5, £2,000 were coming in. And we were then taking all the costs against that £2,000 and then keeping a decent profit for us. The key thing with HMO is to buy the right building and do the right works to it. There's a lot of regulatory work that comes with HMO. So for example, when you buy it, you have to have all your fire safety modification done, like fire doors, interlinking smoke alarms. If you've got a cellar, you've got board up the cellar with fire rated plasterboard and skim it, put an extra interlinking smoke alarm in there. So that is the fire regulation stuff. Then you've got the amenities. There's a minimum standard amenities that the government have written up for HMO. And those are basically telling you what you need to, the minimum amount of cleanings, cooking spaces that you need to provide per head of tenants you've got. So the pros are that you potentially make a lot more money per unit. So the 5 rooms times £400, you get more money. But the cons, in my opinion, are the regulation now in 2025 onwards gets even harder. Interest rates have doubled over the last 4 years. So the margins for us have squeezed, as well as the utility rates have trebled. So, we don't have to be a HMO specialist to know that if you look at your gas, electricity and water, prices have surged massively. So let me give you a final some numbers. So typically for a 5-6-bedroom HMO, before Liz Truss and before the post-COVID increase in energy, post-Ukraine war energy increase, we used to net around £1,000 to £1,200 per 5-6-bedroom HMO. That's in the southeast of England, Kent, Essex, London, etc., etc. Today, in 2025, well, these have reduced drastically to somewhere between £300 a month profit to sometime even just £100 a month profit. In another video, I can talk about the breakdown of cost. But for now, all I'm going to say is actually right now, HMOs, if you are making the average rent of around £500 to £550 per room, you may find by the time you deduct your maintenance costs, your insurance, the selective license, the gas set, electricity, water, council tax, all the things that you pay for when you are renting a HMO, all of those added together become very expensive. So in a nutshell, I think now HMO in 2025, we're getting out of it because it's becoming less profitable than it has ever been over the last 15 years or so. And the property rents have not gone up, but yet we are finding ourselves with a massive cost increase. The next one I want to talk about is title split. And here, if you watch season one, it is all about title split. And if you haven't, I'd suggest you go back and actually listen to some of the old episodes that we've recorded about title split. But in this segment, I'm going to just talk about what title split is, what are the benefits and the drawback of title splitting. So what is title splitting? Well, actually, imagine you've got loads of blocks of flats in one building under one freehold. Actually, don't imagine it. There are hundreds of thousands of buildings like that in the UK. And the strategy here is around disaggregation. So think of Costco, think of wholesale to retail. You go to Costco, you buy a big pack of 20 toilet rolls, and then you bring it to retail in a corner shop, and then you sell it at an itemized level, and the prices are increased. So let's say you pay £20 for a pack. When you come to retail, you're selling that £40. That's exactly what I do with blocks of flats. So I'm buying something on one freehold, and so it's still together on one freehold, and then I disaggregate them and put them on separate leases. Why do I do that? Because I create value out of disaggregation, because then this one flat that never was able to be bought by a first-time buyer, for example, is now available on the market to be bought. So there are three ways we add value when I'm buying a block of flats, or my mentees are buying blocks of flats, that we look for. One is below market value. So a £300,000 block, we should be, you know, that will value about £500,000. Works fine, because that's already 200,000 less than the disaggregated value. We buy below market value. The second element, we do a light refurb. We're not digging foundation. We're not spending 2 years. We're spending 3 to 4 months in and out of these blocks, light refurb and get out. And the third element is this disaggregation. We put them on separate leases, and those three added together should give us enough of an uplift. In this case, for example, you buy at 300, you then refinance out on a GDV of 500. That uplift of 200,000 is what you leave in as your deposit across all of these flats. And then you're able to recycle your money out. So what are the advantages? Well, actually, one, you recycle your capital out. And every time you do that, you use the same money to buy the next block of flats. In terms of a passive income, you're buying a business, if anything else. You're buying a building that's already been rented by the old landlord, and you're buying that income. So straight away, you buy below market value, you buy the income, and then when you get your GDV up, you recycle your capital out. Those are the three reasons why I have been able to grow the portfolio into the hundreds. The cons of title split, quite frankly, it is complex. And ultimately, this is why I do this one-to-one coaching program with my mentees, because I can then take them through the complexity on a one-to-one basis and walk them through the whole process, as well as getting access to my power team. They are as important as me: the lawyers, the brokers, the floor plan designers, the architect, the planning consultant, and anything in between that is needed. Depending on what I'm buying or my mentees are buying, we are able to help them. This is why title split is the strategy for me in 2025, and has been for the last 12 years. So we talked about HMO, we talked about title split. The next strategy I want to talk about is service accommodation. So what is service accommodation? Well, imagine you are an Airbnb person, you are a hotelier. So you rent or you buy a building. In that, you've got a flat, a house, or whatever it is, or a farmhouse, whatever you have. And then you add value to this, you basically renovate it to a spec that looks like a hotel. And that is what you then rent out on Airbnb, on booking.com, on any of those other platforms. So how do you make money out of it? Well, actually, the idea being that if you were going to rent a flat, let's say a typical flat in London, let's say £1,500 a month. So instead of making £1,500 a month as a service accommodation, you'd hopefully expect to make around £3,000 a month. Why? Because you are going to be renting this building, this flat in this case, at a unit price that's higher than £1,500 divided by 30 is £50 a day, £50 a night. You'd hope that you'll be renting your serviced accommodation at around £150 a night. So that will triple the amount of money that you'll make per night. Why? That's because you're actually providing a service like a hotel. So most people who are not thinking about going to a hotel because it's expensive, you've got a family of three or four or five, you need to have two different hotel bedrooms, you then go to Airbnb and booking.com and you look for this service accommodation. And that's what this strategy is about. What are the pros of it? So quite frankly, if you are good at it and you've got good systems in place and you understand that the level of service that you provide is key to success of this strategy, then you can be making, you know, a lot more margin per night of rental. And you are able to then, as long as you are able to rent it for, let's say, 50, 60, 70% of the time, you are probably more likely to make more money than renting it as a single unit. The cons of service accommodation, well, actually, there are quite a few. So one, you become a hotelier. You become somebody who a guest will ring at 3 o'clock in the morning saying, I can't get in. The lock's not working. You can get a lot of challenges in that. We tried it for a few years and then we gave up in the end because the service part of it was so much hard work. Two, you are at the mercy of the ratings because you could do your best to provide the best ratings, but for some reason, the guests are not happy for whatever reason and they want a refund. You don't want to give a refund and then they start to mark you down. So that's another, you are at the mercy of some ratings on Airbnb, on Bookit.com. Third, interest rates on these properties can or have been in the past more expensive and you need a specialist mortgage to actually be operating a service accommodation. So you need to make sure that you don't fall foul of the rules and you get the right service accommodation mortgages. And the last one I would say about service accommodation is the admin part of it. There's a lot of admin. You are continually, if you're doing turnover all the time, you know, turnaround all the time, you've got to have a cleaning team, a booking team, a marketing team. It's a proper business. And to be successful at it, you've got to run it just as that. So service accommodation for me is, quite frankly, potentially profitable if you have all the infrastructure in place, but a lot of work. Think of hotel running level of work. Okay, so the next one I'm going to talk about is your box standard buy-to-let strategy as a property investment strategy. So what is buy-to-let? Well, as it says, you buy a property and then you put it on rent. So what is the good thing about it? Well, for the last 25 years, I've been doing the same thing, buying properties at a discounted value and then renting them. We have evolved over time. And nowadays, when I look back on my buy-to-let investments, actually, it took me 10 years to get up to about 8 properties. And then the next 15 years, we got to the hundreds. So why is that? Why? Because buy-to-let, by definition, is you're buying one property at a time. So let's take the typical property at the moment in the UK is around 300,000, a typical three-bedroom house. So you will need 25% deposit on a £300,000 property. And then you take 225,000 as a mortgage. So the 75,000 is parked into this property for probably the best part of 5 years. So, and then on the 225, you take a mortgage, let's say of around 5% at the moment. So you will be putting 11,000, about £1,000 a month. For that £1,000 interest only mortgage, you can expect to be making about £1,300-1,400 a month of income on the rent. So really your margin's around £300 a month. The challenge here is you make £300 a month. That's before we deduct any gas cert, any maintenance fees, any cost of management. But let's say you make £300 a month times 12 is £3,600. And then you try and work out your margin on your return on investment. So you've paid 75,000 pounds on your deposit, and then your stamp duty, legal fees. Let's say you parked in £100,000 to make £3,600 of net profit. That is a very slim 3.6% return on your money. This is why, for me, buy-to-let just does not work anymore. The single dwelling buy-to-let does not work anymore because the margins are so squeezed that you might as well just put your money in the bank or an investment trust or some form of tracker on the stock market that you'll make more money on. the good things about buy-to-let, really, if you've got nothing else to do, you've got lots of money, you can park lots of £100,000 in, fine. But otherwise, you might need to look at the other strategies that I've talked about in this podcast that will make your money work harder. Let alone the fact that you've got now a selective license for all landlords. You've got to, there's a lot of hate for landlords in different areas where you might be buying buy-to-let and you are seen to be restricted the access to first-time buyers. So quite frankly, there's a lot of hassle for not a lot of gains, especially if you're trying to get a passive income. Imagine a passive income issue. If you make £300 a month, how many £300 would you need to be able to give up work and be financially free? Let's say the average is £3,000 a month. You'll need 10 of these buy-to-let. 10 times £100,000 that you'll need. You need £1 million to replace your income. And that's why title split gets you there a lot faster. The last two I'm going to talk about strategy-wise are the other two that I've been following for the last 10 years or so. The first one being commercial conversion, and the last one I'll talk about new build. So let's start with commercial conversion. So what is it? So as the word says, you're taking a commercial unit and you're converting it into residential. Typically, what I would be buying is a mixed-use commercial, so shops below and flats above. Why? Because I de-risk my proposition by already buying residential that's already renting, and I can actually do a light refurb, rent them, title split them, take the money out. On top of that, I will then convert the shops that comes below to then convert it into residential. Why do I do that? Because typically when you are buying mixed-use commercial, the commercial unit, especially if it's on secondary high street, which is now you can do under permitted development, you can add a lot more value by doing that. And how do I do that? Well, once you've done, so typically what I will do is I will buy the mixed-use commercial, renovate all the flats first. Depending on how long and how many commercial conversion I'll be doing, I will start to split the title, create separate leases, start to refinance most of the money out from the properties above, and then get onto the route of planning permission or permitted development submission to the council with the plans that the architects have drawn, and wait for 8 weeks typically to get the approval from the council or the planning department, to be more specific. And once we get the approval, we start works. On average, it takes about 3 to 6 months, depending on the number of units you're converting and how many units you're putting, you know, you're creating out of those mixed-use commercial. It could be anything between 3 months for one unit, 12 months for a lot more than that. Now, what are the pros of commercial conversion? Well, typically you tend to buy those mixed-use at a lower rate than if they were already residential conversion. So the cost is reduced, but the works become a lot harder. So what are the cons of commercial conversion? Well, actually, you are having to be a lot more skillful as a developer to be able to take what you have bought and then go through the process of applying for planning permission or under permitted development. So you need architects, you need a planning consultant, you need a building control, you need a team of builders that would be able to come and gut the whole thing out, electricians to come and rewire, plumbers to come and replumb and put new systems in place, as well as, and some of the harder parts are where you have to deal with the utility companies to come and split meters and create new utility suppliers for, say, 4 units, 6 units. And that you are at the mercy of those utility companies. And that is not only expensive, but very much hard work in terms of an admin perspective. So those are the kind of the cons of commercial conversions that I would think of. It's costly. It's quite time consuming in the sense of administration when you're dealing with all of these third parties. And for me, the hardest bit is at the end. Once you've done the works, you've got carpets down, just before you put the carpets down, so you've painted, everything is pretty much ready, 95%, then you start to look at the soundproofing sign-off. You need to get the building control sign-off, and that can add another 2 or 3 months before you can get all the insurance signed off that you can get mortgages on it. So it's quite a protracted process that you need to be aware of before you get into it. So the last strategy that I'm going to talk about is new build and ground up development. So out of the six that I've talked about, the HMO, commercial conversion, title split, buy to let, service accommodation, new build is actually completely different and the different challenge that it poses. So what is a new build? As it says, you know, you have a piece of land that you will develop into new properties. So why do I do it? Well, actually, I de-risk myself. As part of the title, I mix quite a lot of strategy in when I'm doing new build. So I'll take one example. I bought a block of 8 flats with a piece of land next to it. So I've already de-risked myself by buying this block of flat that I'm a title split, paying 675. The GDV is £1 million. So we'll take all of our money out by the time we renovate this 8 flats. And then on top of that, I've carved out the land adjacent to it. Why do I do that? It's because, let's say I don't get planning permission, which is challenge number one, I have still taken all my money out. But hopefully, you know, we go in with it, the idea that we're buying things that we are going to get planning permission for. So new build means that you have to buy a piece of land, get planning permission for it, check whether there's overage. Lots of people fall foul of not knowing what an overage scheme is. Overage is basically the seller saying, look, if you do develop this land and you get planning permission and you build it, I want X percentage of that value. So the one that I've just bought, the lady wanted 30% overage on it. We've got it down to 10% overage on the whole value of the development, but also not the exit value. So if I build a building of £1 million, she doesn't get 10% of a million. Actually, I've negotiated down to say, if the value of the land on entry is 100,000, the value of the land by the time we get planning permission is 200,000, she will get 10% of the 100,000. So it's really key you understand how overage works. Otherwise, you can get stung and you do all this work and you have to give 20, 30% of the total value. So that's the complexity of new builds that you need on entry, you need to understand. Then you've got the planning issue that you've got to jump through, because not everybody will be happy for you to be building. So you've got to go through planning permission. Well, we tend to do pre-app planning first, then planning based on the pre-app recommendation that we get from the council. Then the architect redraws a full drawing to get the full planning done. We wait 8 weeks. We see whether what blockage we can get, where we get from local residents. And then if we don't get it, we start to build. So there becomes another challenge of, you need to find contractors and builders in place. You need to make sure you do the, you know, for example, you might have tree preservation orders that you need to adhere to. Then you get off the ground. The hardest bit is always the groundworks, to make sure that that's done so you don't skimp on cost like this. And then you get off the ground, you start to build, then it becomes a lot easier to get off the ground, build the concrete, the cavity walls, the roof, and then you basically, then it becomes an internal fit that you need your gas, electricity, plumber, and all the kind of usual tradesmen that you will need. But just to finish off on new build, what are the pros of it? Actually, the returns can be quite significant. If you buy the land at the right price, you manage your cost, you can get a really significant return. Just on that, it used to be, when I first started 15, 20 years ago, it used to be 30, 30, 30 was the model. Everybody who's listening to this will probably recognize it. 30% that you say the land should cost, 30% should be the build cost, and 30% should be your kind of profit, there or thereabouts. Nowadays, I find that the land cost is 40%, material and labor costs post-Brexit, post-COVID is around 40%. So you should be really careful about your margin. You're probably, at the best of cases, looking at 20% margin. So be mindful about how much you're actually paying for the land. That's why when I'm coaching people around title split and my mentees, we're trying to buy land on the side, we're trying to de-risk it by getting all the money out from the building itself, and then the land becomes it virtually free. So cost, it needs to be managed. Complexity needs to be managed around the planning. And on top of that, you need to make sure you have a team around you, end to end, from the planners, the architect, to the builders, and the final sign off on the building regs. So that is it for me. These are the 6 strategies that I've employed over the last 25 years to get from 8 houses to hundreds of properties, somewhere in around 250 tenants, with the expectation we'll get to about 1,000 over the next 10 years. So it is about taking action. It's about picking the right strategy at the right time. And to me, in 2025, the strategy to be picking out of all 6 that I've talked about, they all have their own merits. They all deliver certain returns. But the best strategy that I keep following over the last 15 years, I have now been mentoring for the last 5 years, is title split. Why? Because it does 2 things. It allows me to recycle most of my money, if not all of my capital, out. And 2, I am building passive income across multiple units. Takes the 8 that I've bought, I'm making 8 times £300 in one hit, £2,400, and I bought 41 units in Q1 2025. So if you put 41 units at £300, that's £12,000 of additional income brought in 6 transactions or so. So that's why title split for me works well. Take passive income on the way in. You build your financial freedom because you are getting more rent per properties bought, as well as you recycle all your capital, if not most of your capital, out. As we see interest rates will start to come down now, we will be able to recycle all of our capital out to reuse again and again and again to keep buying those block of flats. So find out more, go to our website, www.quiddityGroup.co.uk. After this, DM me or send us a WhatsApp and we will be able to share with you how you can get involved in title split.